beyond an occasional grunt of assent. Eventually, conversation dried up, and the guy at the head of the table asked if everyone agreed the Army's needs and requirements were now properly in the record. All hands went up. The guy repeated the question, this time personally to and directly at Bryony Walker, possibly a courtesy, possibly out of spite. Her own words fed back to her. But Walker took no offense. She just agreed. Yes, she was completely satisfied. Whereupon the four staffers stood up and left the room, hustling and bustling and without a word, as if to take time out to say goodbye would hopelessly overburden their busy schedules. The women stood up, but the next out of the room was the Army procurement guy, who just clapped his Marine buddy on the shoulder and disappeared. Whereupon the Marine clapped his NCO on the shoulder, and they walked out together, leaving just Reacher and the women in the room. But it didn't stay that way for long. The women were already in a huddle, not exactly leaning in, but face to face, a tight little triangle, shoulder to shoulder, touching each other, like regular women, but maybe the West Point version. They drifted in lockstep to the door. There was a polite glance from Alice Vaz, and then they were gone. Reacher stayed where he was. No big rush. Nothing he could have done about it. Maybe there were guys who could have pulled it off. "Hey, I'm sorry about your dead buddy that I never met, but can I separate you from your grieving pals and take you out and buy you a drink?" Reacher was not one of those guys. But the women weren't going anywhere. He was sure of that. He got up and stepped out and saw them where the corridor widened into a lobby. They were still together in their tight huddle, not going anywhere. Just talking. Lots of social rules. They would end up in a bar, for sure. But not yet. Reacher drifted back to a bank of payphones and dialed. He leaned on the wall. He saw Bryony Walker glance at him, then glance away. Just the out-of-towner making a call. Maybe to his local buddies, telling them he's done for the day, asking them where the action is at night. Christopher said,
"Yes?"
Reacher said, "Did you hear about Christine Richardson?"
"Yes, we did."
"So, it's going to be a little harder now."
"It might be over now, if Richardson was the leak all along."
"Suppose she wasn't?"
"Then it might be easier, not harder, with the other three. Emotion helps. Loose lips sink ships."
It wasn't a fun afternoon. Romance is on no one's mind. They're talking to each other. There's no way into a conversation like that.
"Exploit any opportunity you can."
"You're not in the capital, but you're monitoring their fax line, right?"
"Correct."
"Including tonight?"
"Of course. What do you know?"
"It's not DeWitt."
"How do you know?"
"She was upset. She's 30 years old, and she never had anyone die before."
"It's natural to be upset."
"But if she had a secret agenda, she'd have gotten over it, to do her work. But she didn't. She hardly said a word. She sat there like the whole thing had no purpose, which was absolutely the appropriate reaction for anyone without an agenda of her own."
"Had either of the other two gotten over it?"
"Alice Vaz was all over it. Bryony Walker likewise. And Walker made a real big fuss about going through it all one more time, with every detail stated for the record."
"So she could check if she missed anything in her last two faxes?"
"That's a possible interpretation."
"What did Vaz do?"
"Same thing she did in the transcripts. Big geography. She should quit and run a travel agency."
"What are you going to do?"
"I don't know yet. Just monitor that fax line for me." Reacher hung up the phone. The women were still in the lobby, still talking, still not going anywhere. He set off towards them, just strolling, like a man with an hour to kill, like a stranger in town, drawn towards the only faces he knew. Plan A was to keep the pretense going, maybe getting into the group via Bryony Walker's interest in gunshot wounds. Maybe she was a sniper groupie. He could offer some opinions, headshot or chest shot.
"Well, ma'am, I favor the throat shot. If you hit it just right, you can make their heads come off."
Plan B was to abandon the pretense and come clean as an MP captain undercover for MI and see where that road led, which might be all the way home. If he made out Richardson had been the prime suspect, then whoever worked hardest to reinforce that conclusion would be the guilty one. If no one worked hard, then Richardson had been the guilty one all along. He strolled on. Plan A or Plan B? They made the decision for him. They handed it to him on a plate. They were civilized women, and reflexively polite in the way that military people always are. He was heading close to them. He wasn't going to pass by on the other side, so he had to be acknowledged. Bryony Walker looked straight at him, but Darwin DeWitt was the first to speak. She said,
"We weren't introduced. I guess it wasn't that kind of an afternoon."
"No, ma'am," Reacher said. "I guess it wasn't."
He said his name. He saw each of the three file it away in her memory. He said,
"I was sorry to hear about Colonel Richardson."
DeWitt nodded.
"It was a shock."
"Did you know her well?"
"We all came up together. We expected to carry on together."
"Brother officers," Reacher said, "or sisters, I guess."
"We all felt that way."
Reacher nodded. They could all afford to feel that way. No rivalry. Not yet. They faced no significant bottleneck until the leap from Brigadier General to Major General, from one star to two. Then a little rivalry might bite. Bryony Walker said,
"It must have happened to you, Sergeant. You must have lost people."
"Ma'am, one or two."
"And what do you do on days like that?"
"Well, ma'am, typically we would go to a bar and toast their journey. Usually starts out quiet and ends up happy, which is important, for the good of the unit."
Alice Vaz said,
"What unit?"
"I'm not at liberty to say, ma'am."
"What bar?"
"Whatever is close at hand."
DeWitt said,
"The Hyatt is a block away."
They walked over to the Hyatt. But not exactly together, not a foursome. More accurately, a threesome and a singleton in a loose association, held together only by Reacher playing dumb enough to miss the hints he should get lost. The women were too polite to make it more explicit. But even so, the walk was excruciatingly embarrassing. Out of the grounds, across Constitution, onto New Jersey Avenue, across Louisiana and D Street, and then they were there, at the Hyatt's door. Reacher stepped up promptly and held it open, because immediate action was required right there, right then. Indecisive loitering on the sidewalk would have led to heavier hints. They shuffled past him, first Vaz, then DeWitt, and finally Walker. Reacher fell in behind them. They found the bar. Not the kind of place Reacher was used to. For one thing, there was no bar, not as such. Just low tables, low chairs, and waiter service. It was a lounge. Walker looked at Reacher and asked,
"What should we drink?"
Reacher said,
"Pitchers of beer, but I doubt if they have those here."
A waiter came and the women ordered white wine spritzers. It was summer. Reacher ordered hot coffee, black, no sweeteners required. He preferred not to clutter a table with jugs and bowls and spoons. The women murmured among themselves, a trio, with occasional guilty glances at him. Unable to get rid of him, unable to be rude to him. He asked,
"Do those meetings usually go like that? Apart from the thing with Colonel Richardson, I mean?"
Vaz said, "You're first."
Richard said, "And hopefully my last, ma'am."
Walker said,
"No, it was worth it. It was a good at-bat. They can't say no to everything, so we just made it fractionally more likely they'll say yes to something else, sometime soon."
"You like your job?"
"Do you like yours, Sergeant?"
"Well, yes, ma'am, most of the time."
"I could give the same answer."
The waiter brought the drinks, and the women returned to their three-way private conversation. Reacher's coffee was in a wide, shallow cup, and there wasn't much of it. He was a couple of mouthfuls away from the next awkward moment. They hadn't gotten rid of him leaving the Capitol, and they hadn't gotten rid of him entering the hotel. The end of the first round of drinks was their next obvious opportunity. All it would take was an order. Sergeant, you're dismissed. No way of fighting that, not even under Plan B. Captain, you're dismissed, worked just as well when said by majors and lieutenant colonels. But it was Darwin DeWitt who left after the first round of drinks. She was still not talking much, and she clearly wasn't enjoying herself. She was finding no catharsis. She said she had work to do, and she got up. There were no hugs, just tight nods and brave smiles and meaningful glances, and then she was gone. Vaz and Walker looked at Reacher, and Reacher looked right back at Walker and Vaz. No one spoke. Then the waiter came back right on cue, and Vaz and Walker ordered more spritzers, and Reacher ordered more coffee. The second spritzer loosened Walker up a little. She asked Reacher what he felt when he pulled the trigger on a live human being. Reacher quoted a guy he knew. He said, "recoil" against his shoulder. Walker asked what was the longest kill he had ever made. Truth was, about 11 feet at that stage, because he was a cop, but he said 600 yards, because he was supposed to be a sniper. She asked with what. Truth was, a Beretta M9, but he said an M21, an ART-2 scope, and a 7.62 NATO round. Alice Vaz asked, "Where was this?" Reacher said, "Ma'am, I'm not at liberty to say."
"Which sounds like a special forces scenario."
"I guess it does.
600 yards is fairly close range for you guys."
"Practically point blank, ma'am."
"Black bag for CIA or legitimate for us?"
"Ma'am, I'm not at liberty to say."
And those twin denials seemed to create some credibility. Both women gradually abandoned their defensive body language. Not that it was replaced by personal interest, it was replaced by professional interest, which came across in a poignant way. Neither woman had a realistic hope in her lifetime of becoming a battlefield commander. Both were forced to take a different route. But both seemed to look across the divide with concern. In an ideal world, they would be fighting, in which case they would want the best available weapons, no question about that. In which case, simple ethics demanded the best available weapons for those currently doing the fighting in the less-than-perfect world. Simple justice. And simple preparedness, too. Their sisters might never get there, but their daughters would one day. Walker asked Reacher his private opinion about the rifle design. Were there things that should be added, taken away? Reacher said, "Ma'am, I think they got it about right." Partly because that was the kind of thing a sergeant would say to an officer, and partly because it was true. Walker seemed happy with the answer. Then, both Walker and Vaz got up to use the restroom. Reacher could have used a pit stop too, but he didn't want to follow directly behind them. That would have been too weird, right after the walk from the Capitol, so he waited. He saw Vaz use a payphone on her way. There was a line of them in wooden hutches on the lounge's back wall. Vaz used the center phone. Walker didn't wait for her. She went on ahead. Vaz spoke for less than 10 seconds, and then hung up and continued on her way to the restroom. Walker never came back from the restroom. Vaz sat down alone and unconcerned and said Walker had gone back to the office. She had used the D Street door. She had a lot to do. And did Reacher want another drink? Reacher and Vaz, alone together. Walker on her own, on the loose. Reacher said, "You buying?" Vaz said, "Sure." Reacher said, "Then yes."
"Then follow me," Vaz said. "I know a better place than this."
The better place was tucked in close to the tracks, out the back of Union Station. It was better in the sense it had an actual bar. It was worse in every other way. In particular, it was in a lousy neighborhood, full of ugly brick and ramshackle buildings, with dark streets and all kinds of alleyways and yards all over the place, with more wires overhead than trees. The bar itself felt like a waterfront establishment, mysteriously landlocked, low and wide, and made a warren by subdivision into many different room-sized areas. Reacher sat with his back to a corner where he could see both front and rear doors at once. Vaz sat next to him, not close, but not far away either. She looked good, better than she had a right to. Class A uniform, female officer, was generally no kind of a flattering outfit. It was essentially tubular. Maybe Vaz's was tailored. It had to be. The jacket was waisted. It went in and out properly. The skirt was tight and a little short, just a fraction,
but detectable by the human eye unaided. Vaz said, I hope not to be in this shop much longer.
Where next?
War plans, I hope.
Do they cash this shop's checks?
You mean, can I take my credits with me?
Absolutely.
Politics and war plans, they're practically the same thing.
So when?
As soon as possible.
But you're worried this business with Colonel Richardson will slow things down. No one likes a fuss, right? And the shop is understaffed now. Maybe they can't let you go.
You're pretty smart for a sergeant.
Rank has nothing to do with being smart, ma'am.
Tell me about yourself.
You first.
Nothing to tell, Vaz said. California girl, West Point cadet. First I wanted to see the world, then I wanted to control it. You?
Marine Corps boy, West Point cadet. First I wanted to see the world, and then I wanted to survive it.
I don't remember many West Point cadets who became sergeants afterwards.
Some did, from time to time. In a way.
I see.
Do you?
You're an undercover operator,
Vaz said.
I always knew the day would come.
When what?
When you finally figured it out. As in, your procurement office is riddled with corruption and has been for years. As in, you don't need a new sniper rifle. You know that. But those guys have already sold stock in the new model. Maybe the money is already spent, so they have to make it happen any way they can. I mean, did you hear some of the arguments they were making?
Where is their office?
Who? Procurement is a big department.
The guy I saw today, for instance.
His office is in the Capitol building.
With a fax machine.
Of course.
Did any of the others know this?
In the political shop? We all did. Why do you think Walker made them go through the whole thing again today? Because she wanted to generate a third fax.
Why?
An extra piece of evidence for you. We knew you'd catch up with it eventually.
Why didn't one of you drop a dime before?
Not our place.
You mean the cost-benefit ratio wasn't right. One of you would have to step up, and it's conceivable she could lose, because anything can happen in a military court, in which case she's out of the running right from that moment, because she was once on the losing side. You couldn't risk that kind of mistake, not having come so far.
The running for what?
For whatever it is you all plan to be.
For a spell, we thought the previous sniper could be the undercover guy, the one you replaced, like entrapment. He was letting the officer push him to want more and more, but in the end, we thought he was just a sniper. So we'd have nailed you for the real undercover guy in about a minute, except no one was really paying attention this afternoon.
Because of Richardson. What did she think was happening?
The same as we all did. Procurement is a swamp, and you'd notice sooner or later.
What is it you plan to be?
Respected, perhaps within a closed community, but by someone.
Has your life lacked respect so far?
You have no idea, Vaz said.
She turned towards him, moving on the bench, her knees coming close to his, dark nylon over dark skin. She said,
I'm proceeding on the assumption that I can trust my impression that you're younger than me, and in a branch with much less generous and accelerated promotion, and that therefore I outrank you.
I'm a captain, Reacher said. Ma'am.
Therefore, if our chains of command were in any way related, it would be inappropriate for us to have a close relationship. Therefore, the question is, are our chains of command in any way related?
I think they're about as far apart as chains of command can be.
Wait there, she said. I'll be right back.
And she got up and threaded her way through the cluttered space, heading for the restroom corridor in back. 5 minutes minimum, Reacher thought. He followed her as far as a payphone on the wall. The phone was a scratched old item, and the wall behind it was dark with smoke and grime. He dialed and said his name. Cornelius Christopher said,
Yes?
Reacher said, I'm done.
What does that mean? You're quitting?
No, it means the job is done.
What do you know?
Walker must be back at the Capitol by now. Any faxes yet?
No.
You were wrong. No one is leaking to a foreign firearms manufacturer. No one ever was. Why would anyone need to? Everyone knows what a good sniper rifle should be. It's self-explanatory. It's obvious. The basic principles have been understood for a century. No one needs to gather secret intelligence, because they already know.
So, what's the story?
I'm waiting for the final proof. I should have it in 5 minutes or less.
Proof of what?
It's Alice Vaz, Reacher said. Think about the transcripts. Her big-picture questions. She asked a couple more this afternoon. She wanted it spelled out exactly where this new rifle will be used. She asked what new environments it might face.
So,
she was trying to get into war plans through the back door, and the procurement guy fell for it. No details, but he gave plenty of weather clues. Anyone could reverse engineer our entire slate of global intentions from what he said.
Like what?
He said high altitude plus freezing mist.
Afghanistan, Christopher said. We're going to have to go there sooner or later.
And extreme dry heat with sand infiltration.
The Middle East, Iraq most likely.
And rainforest humidity and high ambient temperature.
South America, Colombia and so on. The drug wars.
And in snow many degrees below zero.
If we have to go to the Soviet Union.
You see, she got a summary of all our future plans from the guy. Exactly the kind of oblique data that enemy intelligence analysts love.
Are you sure?
I gave her 2 seconds to react, and she came up with blaming procurement for being corrupt. It was almost plausible. She's very smart.
Which enemy? Which foreign intelligence?
The Soviets, of course. A local fax number, probably in their embassy.
She's their asset?
In a big, big way. Think about it. She's on the fast track. She's going right to the top, which is what? The Joint Chiefs, at least. But maybe more. A woman like this could be President of the United States.
But how did they recruit her? And when?
Probably before she was born. Her granddaddy was some big Red Army hero, so maybe her daddy wasn't a real refugee. Maybe the KGB shuffled him to Hungary so he could get out and look like a dissident, whereupon his daughter could be born an American and become a real deep-down sleeper. She was probably groomed for the fast track from birth. These people play a long game.
That's a lot of assumptions.
The proof will be here in about 3 minutes. Or not.
But why risk wasting a super high-value asset on this? Because if you're right, then this is useful, but it's not life-changing. This is not the hydrogen bomb.
I think this was kind of accidental. I think it came up in the normal course of her duties. But she couldn't resist phoning it in. Habit or a sense of obligation, if she's a true believer.
What's the proof you're getting in 5 minutes, or is it 3?
It's 2 minutes now, probably, Reacher said. She made a brief call from the Hyatt Hotel. Think about it. She's a huge asset. Maybe their biggest ever. She's headed all the way to the top, which could be anywhere. And right now, she's stopping in war plans next, which is a real big prize in itself. So she has to be protected. Like no one has ever been protected before. And she was suspicious of me somehow. Maybe routine paranoia. I was new. I was hanging around. So she called for help.
She told the embassy's wet boys where I'd be and when, and then she lured me into the trap. Right now, I'm supposed to believe I'm about to get in her pants.
Soviet wet boys are coming for you?
1 minute now, probably. I'm about to be a mugging gone wrong. I'm going to be found dead on a street corner.
Where are you?
In the Badlands behind Union Station.
I can't get anyone there in less than a minute.
I didn't expect you would.
Are you going to be okay?
That depends on how many they send.
Can you arrest Vaz before they get there?
Oh, she's long gone. I'm sure she went straight out the bathroom window. You'll have to pick her up. She'll be heading for her office.
Then a man stepped in through the bar's rear door.
Gotta go, Reacher said. It's starting.
Reacher hung up the phone. The guy at the rear door was compact and hard-edged, dressed in black, moving easily. He looked vaguely similar to Vaz in terms of ethnic background, but he was a decade older. Nothing in his hands. Not yet. Not inside a public bar. Reacher guessed the point of the guy coming in the back was to chase him out the front, where the main force would be gathered. Easier to set up a mugging gone wrong on a public street rather than in a private yard in back of a bar, because it wasn't a great street, not a great neighborhood. Broken lighting, plenty of shadows, plenty of doorways, passers-by habituated by instinct and long experience to look away and say nothing. The guy was scanning the room. Vaz had spent very little time on the phone, very few words, probably not more than big guy, very tall, gray suit. Reacher felt the guy's eyes on him. He practically heard the check marks. Big guy, right there. Very tall, no question. Gray suit, here's our boy. The guy started away from the door. Reacher started towards it. A wise man asked, "What's the best time to plant a tree?" A wise man answered, 50 years ago, as in, what's the best time to make a decision? A wise man answers, 5 seconds before the first punch is thrown. The guy in black weighed maybe 190, and he was doing about 2 miles an hour. Reacher weighed 250, and he was doing about 3 miles an hour. Therefore, closing speed was 5 miles an hour, and impact, should it happen, would involve some multiple of 440 pounds a square inch. Impact did happen, but not at 5 miles an hour. Closing speed was dramatically increased by a sudden drive off Reacher's back foot and the vicious clubbing swing of his elbow, which therefore connected with a real big multiple of their combined body weights. Reacher caught the guy on the perfect cheekbone-nose-cheekbone line, and the cracking and splintering was clearly audible over the wooden thud of feet on the floor. The guy went down like a motorcycle rider hitting a clothesline. Reacher walked on by and stepped out the back door. Nobody? Or somebody? That was the only question. And there is no bigger difference than nothing, or something. Had they posted all of the main force at the front, or had they left a lone guy as backup? They had left a guy. Dark hair, dark eyes, thicker coat than his pal. Smart as a whip, probably, but any human, given instructions, is at a disadvantage. Your target is a big guy, very tall, gray suit, and however smart you are, however quick, that lethal 1, 2, 3 question-and-answer drumbeat occupies precious mental milliseconds. At least, big guy, check, very tall, check, gray suit, check, like that. And the problem comes when the big guy in the gray suit occupies those same precious milliseconds by walking straight towards you and breaking your skull with his elbow. Reacher walked on, to where an arch led from the yard to the alley. The alley was wide enough for 2 horses and a beer cart axle. At the right-hand end was an arch to another private yard. At the left-hand end was the street. Reacher's shoes were quiet, Class A uniform shoes, therefore man-made soles. No one wanted leather welts, more to polish. Reacher stopped short of the street and put his back against the left-hand wall. In a movie, there would be a busted shard of mirror at his feet. He could edge it out and check the view, but he wasn't in a movie. So he inched around and peered out, one eye. 30 feet away, 4 guys. Therefore, a total of 6 dispatched. 6 wet boys in a foreign embassy, permanently, for her.
Like no one has ever been protected before, a woman like this could be President of the United States. They had two cars parked on the far side of the street, diplomatic plates, probably never paid their parking fines. The guys were in a rough arc near the bar's door, their backs to Reacher, just standing there, semi-animated, like guys sometimes do for a spell, outside a bar. There was no busted shard of mirror, but there was a broken quarter brick, about the size of a baseball. In no way reflective, but the need for a mirror was past. Reacher picked it up, and stepped out to the street, and turned left. 30 feet was 10 paces, and Reacher kept a steady speed through the first 5 of them, and then he wound up and threw the brick fragment at the nearer car and accelerated hard so that the brick shattered the rear windshield, and the 4 heads snapped towards the sound, and Reacher's elbow hit the first of those heads all in a tight little 1-2-3 sequence, less than a second beginning to end. The first guy went down, obviously, vertically beneath Reacher's scything follow-through. And then Reacher spun back off the bounce and drove the same elbow backward into the next guy's head, which left 2 guys still on their feet, one close, one inconveniently distant. So Reacher feinted towards the farther one and then pivoted back and headbutted the nearer one, like he was trying to drive a fence post into dry-baked earth with his head, which left 1 still on his feet, which the guy put to good use by running for it. Reacher let him go. There were things Reacher didn't like to do. Running was one of them. 24 hours later, Reacher was back in Frankfurt, where he stayed for a week, before moving on to Korea for a regular tour. Neither he nor anyone in the world heard anything more about Alice Vaz. He had no idea whether his analysis had been right or wrong, close or wildly inaccurate. But, a month after his arrival in Seoul, he heard he was being considered for a medal, the Legion of Merit, to be specific, and for no discernible reason other than what might be gleaned from the notes in the manual. Awarded for exceptionally meritorious conduct in the performance of outstanding services to the United States.
Small Wars. In the spring of 1989, Caroline Crawford was promoted to the rank of lieutenant colonel. She bought a silver Porsche to celebrate. She had family money, people said, and plenty of it. A trust fund, maybe. Some eminent relative. Maybe an inventor. Her uniforms were tailored in D.C. by the same shop that made suits for the president. She was held to be the richest woman in the army, not that the bar was high. With the new rank came a new posting, so the Silver Porsche's first trip was south from War Plans in the Pentagon to Fort Smith in Georgia. All part of the War Plans method, there was no point making plans that couldn't be executed. High-level, on-the-ground liaison was crucial, with a little surreptitious behind-the-scenes observation mixed in. Every new light colonel's first rotation. Crawford was happy to do it. even though Fort Smith turned out to be a small, damp place in the woods full of desperate characters, special forces of various types, no tailored uniforms, which was okay, promising even, raw material, possibly, for the kind of new units she was going to need. Input at an early stage could be vital. They might even name the units after her. She would make full bird within a year and a half. She would be fast-tracked to her first star. And she was entitled to have some input, wasn't she? Liaison was a two-way street. She was entitled to suggest what they should do, as well as listen to what they couldn't. The first week went well, even though it rained a lot. The rumor mill had it straight within an hour. She was unmarried and available, but not cool to hit on, because war plans was serious shit. So relationships were cordial, but with enough of a hint of a buzz to be interesting, too. The visiting officers' quarters were adequate in every respect, like a motel, but more earnest. The woods were always damp, and stretched for miles all around, but there were roads through, some of them just forest tracks or fire breaks, others with lit-up signs on their muddy shoulders, eventually an hour or so out for barbecue sometimes, or bars with dancing. Life wasn't bad. At the end of the first week, she left Fort Smith in her tailored Class A uniform, in her silver Porsche, and she turned off the county road at the first big fork, which eventually led to a hidden, not quite two-lane, road to nowhere, through the trees, mostly straight and sunlit, perfect with the windows down, with the wet smell of the rich mud on the shoulders, and the woody echo of the exhaust coming back off the bark, part throaty, part whine, part howl. Then, a broken-down car up ahead. A sedan, stopped diagonally across the road, its front wheels turned all the way, its hood up. A guy peering in at the motor. A tall guy, obvious even from 100 yards away. Not lightly built. Big feet. She slowed, late and hard, just for the fun of it, changing down, the exhaust popping behind her like a fireworks show. The stalled sedan was a Detroit product, painted green. The guy under its hood straightened up and turned to look. He was tall indeed, maybe 6'6", in standard battle dress uniform, woodland pattern. He was all in proportion, and therefore far from delicate, but he held himself gracefully. He looked slender, except he wasn't. She stopped the car. She rested her elbow on the door and her chin on her elbow, just looking, part quizzical, part resigned, part ready to help, maybe after some teasing. All those things, and not suspicious at all, the raised hood triggered some kind of ancient early motorist instinct, helpful and sympathetic. That, and the familiar uniform. The tall guy walked closer. Big, clumsy feet, in battered tan boots, but otherwise an elegant, long-legged lope. No hat, cropped fair hair, receding. Blue eyes, an open gaze, somehow both naive and knowing. An otherwise unremarkable face, with features just the right side of blunt. He had a full colonel's eagle in his collar. Above his right pocket, his tape said U.S. Army. Above his left pocket, his tape said Reacher. He said, "Forgive me for interrupting your journey, but I can't push it out the way, can't turn the wheel. I think the power steering broke." She said, "Colonel, I'm sorry." He said, "I'm guessing your car doesn't have a trailer hitch." "I could help you push. That's kind of you, but it would take 10 of us. She said, "Are you who I think you are?" "That depends." "You're Joe Reacher. You just got a new counterintelligence command." "Correct on both counts," Joe Reacher said. "I'm pleased to meet you." He glanced down at her nameplate. Plastic, white on black, because of the tailored Class A's. The nameplate is adjusted to individual figure differences, centered horizontally on the right side, between 1 and 2 inches above the top button of the coat. He looked at her unit insignia and her badges of rank. He said, "You must be Caroline Crawford. Congratulations." "You've heard of me?" "Part of my job. but it's not part of yours to know who I am. Not part of my job, but part of my interest. I like to track the key players. I'm not a key player. Sir, bullshit, with respect, sir. Academic interest or career interest? She half smiled, half shrugged, but didn't answer. He said, both, right? She said, I don't see why it can't be. How high do you plan to get? 3 stars, she said. In the Joint Chief's office, maybe. Anything more would be in the lap of the gods. Joe Reacher said, well, good luck with all of that. And he put his hand in his battle dress pocket. And he came out with a standard Army-issue Beretta M9 semi-automatic pistol, and he shot Caroline Crawford with it, twice in the chest and once in the head. Also with a new posting the same week as Caroline Crawford was a military police major named David Noble. He was detaching from his current command and heading to Fort Benning, Georgia, from where he would oversee criminal investigations throughout the southeastern military districts. A brand new reorganization. Someone's baby. Unlikely to last, but temporarily important work. Noble never got to do it. He was in a car wreck on the way. In South Carolina, an adjacent state. Nearly there. Not fatal, but he ended up at Walter Reed. He had a collapsed lung. He couldn't breathe right. So, an emergency substitute was decided on, and hunted down, and pulled off his current maneuvers, and hustled north to Benning. Just how it always was for the Army. Situation entirely normal. A big job, the second best guy, a week late. On the bright side, people said this new one was a fast study, and a hard worker. He might catch up, if he got started right away. So it was that the same moment Joe Reacher said, I'm not a key player, his younger brother, Jack Reacher, walked into a brand new office more than 100 miles away, and then out again in search of coffee, almost ready to begin overseeing criminal investigations throughout the southeastern military districts. The Porsche was found early the next morning by 4 soldiers in a Humvee, who were trying to find a shortcut back to Smith after a night exercise had gone all kinds of wrong in terms of navigation. They recognized the car from a distance. It was already famous on the base. The new war plans lady. Hot, smart, and rich. Nothing wrong with any of that. Nothing at all. Maybe she had a flat tire. Maybe she was in need of assistance. As they pulled closer, they thought the car was empty. Then they saw it wasn't. They rolled by at walking speed, and their high seating positions let them look down inside the Porsche, where they saw a woman in Class A uniform flopped over backward across the seats, shot twice in the chest and once in the head. They parked nearby and called it in on the radio. Then they sat tight. Crime scenes were not their problem. Within 40 minutes, an MP crew got there, from Fort Smith, with 2 Judge Advocate General lawyers, also from Fort Smith. They all took a look, and then they all stepped back. There was a question of jurisdiction. The road belonged to the county. Hence, the county police had been informed. No choice. They were on their way for a discussion. Fort Benning heard about it almost immediately, a brand new reorganization. Too fresh to be screwed up yet. Reacher had spent until late in the evening studying the new unit manual and reviewing open cases and reading files and talking to people. Then he had grabbed a few hours of sleep and gotten up again with a plan in his head. He figured he had a lot of work to do. The place was drowning in paper, and the NCOs were badly chosen. In his experience, units ran either well or not, depending on the quality of their sergeants. He wanted expert bureaucrats, but he didn't want them to be in love with bureaucracy. There was a difference. He wanted people who treated tasks like an enemy, to be dispatched fast and efficiently and ruthlessly. Or punitively, even. They won't send me that form again. The new unit didn't have such people. They were all too comfortable, a little soft. Like the guy who brought the torn-off telex first thing in the morning. A soft, comfortable guy. Hard to put in words, but he didn't have the spirit Reacher wanted. He didn't have the edge. He didn't look dangerous. The telex said, 1, repeat 1, active duty personnel, found shot to death, 10 miles north of Fort Smith. Circumstances unknown. Reacher pictured a bar fight. A private, or maybe a specialist, in some kind of an altercation with a local. Maybe a Harley fell over in the parking lot, or a glass of beer got spilled. Bars near bases were always full of local civilian hotheads with guns in their pockets and points to prove. He said, "Bring me the details as and when they come in." The soft sergeant undertook so to do and left the room. Reacher picked up the phone and called his new CO. Among other things, he said, "I need a better sergeant here. I need you to send me Francis Neagley. Before the end of the day, preferably." The county sheriff who showed up in the woods knew the value of mud as an evidentiary medium. He parked way short and skirted the scene a yard off the road, pausing often to crouch and study the marks in the fine black tilth, which covered the blacktop more or less side to side, like a scrim, molecules thin in the center and inches thick on the edges. There were a lot of marks, some of them crisp, some of them oozing black water, some of them overwritten by the four soldiers rolling by in their Humvee. The county guy made it all the way to the gaggle of Smith guys, and they all introduced themselves and shook hands, and then stood around mute, maybe taking the legal temperature, maybe rehearsing their arguments. The county guy spoke first. He said, "Was she based at Fort Smith?" A JAG lawyer said, "Yes." "Any indication this was blue on blue?" Meaning, was there a professional dispute I don't need to know about? Is this all in the family? The JAG lawyer said, "No." "Therefore, she's mainly mine until I know for sure the shooter wasn't a civilian. I need to pay attention to a thing like this. I could have a crazy person running around in the woods." What was her name?"
"Crawford."
"What did she do at Fort Smith?"
"I'm afraid I can't tell you that."
"She was ambushed," the county guy said. "I can tell you that. The marks are clear. Someone faked a breakdown. She stopped to help. He had big feet."
The ranking MP said, "What next?"
The county guy said, "It's above my pay grade. Literally in the township bylaws. I have to pass it on to state. No choice."
"When?"
"I already called. They'll be here soon. Then they can decide to keep it or pass it on to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation."
"We can't wait forever."
"You won't have to. Half a day, maybe."
And then the guy crabbed back around the mud to his car, where he got in and sat by himself. The next telex came in an hour later. The same soft sergeant tore it out of the machine and brought it to Reacher's desk. It said, "Gunshot victim previously reported was LTC Caroline C. Crawford, DOA, inside POV, stationary on isolated Forest Road." POV meant personally owned vehicle. DOA meant dead on arrival. LTC meant lieutenant colonel. All of which together added up to an issue. Very few senior officers of Reacher's acquaintance fought to the death in bars, especially not senior officers named Caroline. And even if they did, they didn't wind up inside their own private cars on remote woodland tracks, How would they? Not a bar fight. He said,
Who was she?
The sergeant said, Sir?
I don't know.
Which was a case in point. A decent NCO would have detoured to a book or a phone and brought with him at least a capsule biography and a copy of current orders. Francis Neagley would have had all of that 5 minutes ago, plus a photograph, plus a lock of baby hair if you wanted one. Reacher said,
Go find out who she was.
The dispute over jurisdiction lasted longer than expected. The state cop, who showed up, let slip he wasn't sure if the woods were federal property. Fort Smith's acreage was, obviously. Maybe the undeveloped land all around was, too. The county guy said the road was maintained by the county, that was for sure, and the car was on the road, and the victim was in the car. The JAG lawyers said killing a federal employee was a federal crime, and a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army was assuredly a federal employee, and so on and so forth. Dark clouds gathered in the sky. More rain was on the way. The marks in the mud were about to get washed out. So a compromise was offered. The state police would be the lead agency, but the Army would be fully accommodated. Access would be guaranteed, acceptable to the men in green. The autopsy would be performed by the state in Atlanta, also acceptable because everyone already knew what the autopsy was going to say, otherwise healthy except shot twice in the chest and once in the head. The deal was agreed, whereupon, immediately, all three factions got into a flurry of crime scene photography. Then a hard rain started to fall, and a tarpaulin was draped over the Porsche, and they all waited in their cars for the meat wagon and the tow truck. Reacher looked up and saw his sergeant standing in front of him, a silent approach. The guy had a sheet of paper in his hand, but he didn't pass it over. He spoke instead. He said,
Sir, permission to ask a question?
Which was a bad thing to hear from a unit NCO. It wasn't what it sounded like. It was a whole different announcement, like a girlfriend saying, Honey, we need to talk. Reacher said,
Fire away.
I've heard you don't like my work, and you're having me posted elsewhere?
Incorrect on both counts.
Really?
Likes and dislikes dwell in the realm of emotion. Are you accusing me of having feelings, Sergeant?
No, sir.
I assess your work coldly and rationally, against a custom metric of my own design, which is, are you a guy I could call in the middle of the night with an emergency?
Am I, sir?
Not even close.
So, I'm to be posted?
Negative.
Sir, not to challenge your answer in any way, but I already know Sergeant Neagley has orders to proceed here without delay.
Reacher smiled.
The NCO Grapevine gets faster all the time.
She comes, I go. How else could it work?
It could work by you sticking around and learning something. That's what's going to happen. Neagley will report to me, and you'll report to Neagley. At times, she'll offer advice and encouragement about how to improve your performance.
We're of equal rank.
Pretend she comes from a planet with double the gravity. Her rank is worth more than yours.
How long will she be here?
As long as it takes. You people need to think ahead. This reorganization is going to come out exactly ass backward. You're not going to be up on a hill, peering down on all you survey. You're going to be deep in a hole, getting buried in paper. Because this is going to be the cover-your-ass unit. Everyone in the Army is going to report everything, so whatever turns bad in the end is automatically our fault because we didn't follow it up at the time. So you need to develop a very aggressive attitude toward paperwork. If you hesitate, it will bury you.
Yes, sir.